guys are going
to
go in.
All right, everyone. I'm going to call the meeting of the House Committee on Rules to order for Thursday, March 2nd. First announcement, we are holding over House Bill 2584 because we have limited time today. We're going to go until about 3:45, 3:50 at the latest. So with that, I'm going to open a public hearing on SCR 14.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, SCR 14 acknowledges 75th anniversary of Japanese American internment during World War II and recognizes National Day of Remembrance. It comes to you with unanimous support of your Senate.
Welcome, Senators.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of House Rules. I'm Michael Dembrough. I'm the Senator for District 23. That is Northeast and Southeast Portland, Park Rose and Maywood Park. Colleagues, February 19th marked the 75th anniversary of the executive order issued by President Franklin D. Roosevelt that sent many thousands of Americans into what was euphemistically called internment, but in reality was incarceration. We now understand that this order was a monumental error, understandable in some ways, but shameful overall. It provides us with an object lesson of where we as a nation can go wrong, but also where we can learn from our mistakes. I'm privileged to bring you Senate Concurrent Resolution 14 on behalf of the Governor's Commission on Asian American and Pacific Islander Affairs, where I serve as the Senate's representative. This 75th anniversary is an anniversary, this anniversary on February 19th is an anniversary worth marking every year, but never more so than now in its 75th iteration. If you read the whereases of the resolution, they're designed to serve to inform Oregonians of the history behind the executive order and its particular impact on Oregonians. It also speaks to the steps that Oregonians have taken and that this body has taken in particular to recognize the mistakes that were made, to recognize the brave acts of resistance, and the clear-eyed efforts to recognize and redress this wrong. I'll just read the conclusions to the resolutions. Of course, you know how these resolutions go. The essence of it is in its conclusions. Be it resolved by the legislature of the state of Oregon that we, the members of the 79th Legislative Assembly, recognize the historical significance of February 19th, 1942, the date President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066, restricting the freedom of Japanese Americans and other legal resident aliens through required identification cards, travel restrictions, seizure of personal property, and incarceration. And be it further resolved that we support the goals of the Japanese American community in recognizing the National Day of Remembrance to increase public awareness of these actions. And be it further resolved that we, along with the people of Oregon, in order to recognize and honor the heroism, sacrifice, patience, and loyalty of the Japanese American World War II veterans and internees, and to remember the lessons and blessings of liberty and justice for all, acknowledge the 75th anniversary of the signing of Executive Order 9066, and be it finally resolved that we, along with the people of Oregon, pause to reflect upon the lessons learned from the Japanese-American internment experience, appreciate the contributions that immigrants and refugees bring to our nation, and commit to valuing all Americans, irrespective of their ethnicity, religion, or country of origin. Colleagues, this resolution comes to you in a very bipartisan manner. The co-sponsors of the resolution include Senator Manus Anderson, Senator Chuck Thompson, Representative Brian Clem, and Mark Johnson from this side of the building. And when we presented the bill for its vote on the Senate floor, Senator Ferrioli, the leader of the Senate Republicans, closed, was my co-carrier and closed on the bill in an extremely moving manner. So this is a bipartisan group, as is appropriate for a resolution that gets to our deepest values as a nation. No political party has a monopoly on the truth. It was a member of my party who issued this executive order back in 1942. FDR was a great president in many ways, but like all of us, he was not perfect. He was a man of his time, caught up in an extraordinarily difficult time. Colleagues, this resolution is most profoundly intended as a tribute to our Japanese-American brothers and sisters, to their suffering, their courage, and their resilience. But it's also a tribute to our capacity as a nation to face up to our mistakes, learn from them, resolve to recognize when they are about to reappear, and do whatever we can to keep ourselves from making those mistakes again. It's one of the things that makes these United States such a great nation. Colleagues, in this spirit and for all these reasons, I urge an aye vote from the House on Senate Concurrent Resolution 14.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Montes Anderson.
Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee. I'm delighted to be here to speak in favor of Senate SCR 14. This brings back a lot of memories from my childhood, because a couple of my very good friends, Steve Ando and Nancy Ochita, their parents were interned in Idaho, and Nancy was actually born in the camp. Those memories really convinced me. I was friends with Nancy, and so Roy Ochita and Nancy Ochita sent me what it was like to be in the, and that's what I want to share with you. The Ochita family was given 6 days to vacate their home and business and then report to the Portland Assembly Center, which was the stockyards in Portland, where cattle were sold for slaughter. Tom Ochita was attending Oregon State College, said at that time, studying chemistry, and he just had 5 days to leave Oregon State and report to the stockyards. Everyone on all levels of school and education was now excluded, and all members of the Ochita family were citizens of the United States. They were allowed to take whatever they could carry, bedding, clothes, books, but not cameras, radios, or weapons. And they left all their possessions, horses, livestock, farming tools, and equipment, and their planted crops. And they stored their furniture in a locked shed, but unfortunately it was looted while they were gone. Roy, this is what Roy Ochita sent to me. They were given 6 days, they left their home, and he says it's the worst thing a government could do to any American citizen. The Ochita family had just gotten electric power, so the house was wired for electric lights and power outlets. They changed their wood stove to an electric range. They tossed out their icebox for a refrigerator. They put an electric motor on their gas engine Maytag washer. They installed an electric motor pump to replace their rope and bucket water system, all at a great expense, only to have it taken away by the stroke of a pen. They could not sell their new tractor, their International Harvester tractor, and the implements, so it was consigned to the dealer where they got it. But that company, it did sell it a few months later, but with a huge consignment fee. Their nearly new Chrysler sedan was bought by their great neighbors, the Nybergs, and they also, the Nybergs, drove the Ochitas to the stockyards. They were Norwegian, and rather than having the army truck that was coming around to pick them up to take them to the stockyards. Unfortunately, well, they stored their truck and boxes of stuff in their barn, but unfortunately mice and mold got into almost everything, but they still are ever grateful to the Nybergs. So the stockyards, you know, is a smelly place, and they were put in the horse barn. The room dividers were plywood on the floor with no ceilings or doors. The beds were made of straw. There was one restroom for each sex for hygiene, and there were picnic tables for meals, but you had to stand in line for food. The Ochitas were in the stockyards from April 42 to August of 42, and it was one of the hottest summers on record. And then in August, they were then put on a train and went to Minidoka, Idaho. It was hot and dusty, very cold in the winter, and single wall construction barracks covered with black tar paper to seal out the weather. If we could have the next slide. There's the picture of the Ochita family. And Jack and Shizuku is the parents of Nancy. But that is the Ochita family. And Tom is in there, the one who had to leave Oregon State. It couldn't keep this tent really couldn't keep out the dust in the summer nor the cold in winter because of the half-inch space between the floorboards. They survived in a 20 by 25 foot room with seven folding canvas cots and a coal-fired belly stove for 5 years. They lost their freedom to soldiers with guns, guard towers, barbed wire, and German shepherd dogs. They were fed strange European food. They had a common dining hall or a tent. To shower, there was a line for one of the six shower heads in one room. To wash or shave, they had to wait for one of the six or eight basins in the other room. And if you needed to go to the bathroom, you had to wait for one of the six commodes lined up on one wall without any dividers between the commodes. If you needed to wash your clothes, they had concrete twin tubs and with a newly purchased scrub board, which you had to purchase, and soap. Well, the canteen was three blocks away. The problem is who had money to buy the soap? If you were lucky and were working for the camp, you could get $16 a month. If you were an MD or a dentist, you were paid $20 a month. If you were picking spuds, potatoes, on the outside, you were paid $100 a month. So the Ochitas are happy and thankful for all those teachers that accepted government jobs to teach those interns, and there were other people other than Japanese American that went to be teachers during those 5 years. They were given basic necessities for survival, but as Roy said, or Tom said, it was miserable, Roy. But when they came home, that was fine. That was what it was like. But when they came home to Gresham, there were signs in the stores, no Japs allowed. And so there was a store, Zimmerman's, very near my house, that would allow Japanese to shop there. There were restaurants where they were not allowed to eat. So even though they were citizens, they came back, they were still treated with discrimination. Mitzi Fonner is a very good friend of mine. You can go to the next slide. You'll see Nancy Ochita in the second row to the very right. And I happen to be, or she's the third row, I happen to be in the second row. And then Steve Ando is in the last row on the left. They were very good friends of mine. And when they came back, Mitzi Fonner, my friend, father would bought strawberry plants for the family because they couldn't find a place where they could, you know, buy their strawberry plants to plant. So there were people that actually helped them. And with my father, Roy attended Gresham High all 4 years, and he graduated in 52. But there was such discrimination in the high schools, and he felt so isolated. But there were teachers, and one of them was my father, Bud Monas. And Roy did say it was unbelievable how my dad's words and manners thwarted a lot of the prejudice that was going on in the high schools. Go to the next page. These were my best friends in third grade. And you'll see that Nancy Ochita is right next to me. It brings a human element to this. When they came back, Roy's site, they actually graduated from college, but they enlisted in the U.S. Army. They wanted to prove to everyone that they were really true citizens. And so these people were resilient, and they survived. They are true Americans, and I urge and I vote on SCR 14. Thank you.
Thank you, Senators. Representative Clem. Carol Suzuki, and George Nakata.
Chair Williamson and members of the committee, my name is Carol Suzuki, and it's an honor to testify in favor of SCR 14. I'm a third-generation Oregonian and Japanese-American whose family was directly impacted by Executive Order 9066. My grandparents immigrated to Oregon in the early 1900s from Japan, and they were recruited to work as immigrant farm laborers along the West Coast. And they eventually settled in the Hood River Valley, where they had two children. My dad, Hideo, and his sister, Kiku, were able to lease land and farm it, growing a variety of vegetables and eventually tree fruits like apples and pears. It's important to note that as immigrants from Japan, my grandparents were not allowed to own land, and Japanese immigrants did not receive that right until the early 1950s. So in my family, when my father and my aunt became old enough, my family was finally able to own land because, unlike their parents, they could be U.S. citizens. The passage of SCR 14 is important to me because my grandparents, after living in the United States for over 25 years as law-abiding citizens, or alien residents, as they were called, were wrongly incarcerated in internment camps run by the U.S. government during World War II. This included my father, aunt, and other family members who were American-born U.S. citizens. They were imprisoned not because they had broken any laws, not because they had been involved with any subversive activities, but simply based on the fact that they looked like the enemy. They were rounded up and like cattle and handed a family number that you had to attach to your body or your personal property. They were imprisoned due to my grandparents' country of origin, and on the idea that while they hadn't committed any crimes or acts of sabotage or espionage, they might. The very idea of that is chilling, and yet it seems that some people in power positions of power still seem to be of that mindset. I believe it's important that we commemorate the 75th anniversary of Executive Order 9066 because the lingering memory of this betrayal still affects me today. I think about my dad being 19, and a recent high school grad with his whole life ahead of him, and then being imprisoned by his own country. And it's important to me because my uncle enlisted in the U.S. Army from behind barbed wire and was a member of the famed 442nd Regimental Combat Team in Europe, where the 100th Battalion became the most decorated unit in American history. It's important to me because Executive Order 9066 still casts a shadow over me and my family today. I experienced many instances of racial prejudice growing up in Hood River. And so it very nearly broke my heart when our 9-year-old daughter, after hearing references to the Muslim ban in the news and knowing what happened to people of Japanese ancestry during World War II, asked me if they would come for her. And then she asked me if she looked American enough, like her own blonde-haired, blue-eyed dad, so that she wouldn't be under suspicion. I did my best to assure her that she was safe and to always have pride in her racial heritage. And it's sometimes the words of an innocent child that affect you the most. My daughter should never be afraid of her own government. I work in the Capitol, her father is a state representative. And so I believe very firmly that we as a society must stay vigilant and fight for the principles upon which our democracy was founded, and that unless we remember and remind future generations about the past, we are in danger of repeating those same mistakes. And this is why I feel so strongly about commemorating the 75th anniversary of the Japanese American internment and honor it with a National Day of Remembrance, and I urge you to pass SCR 14. Thank you.
George, please.
Chair Williamson, members of the Rules Committee, thank you.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to share a few brief remarks with you this afternoon. 7.5 decades ago, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt passed an executive order, one of 3,721 executive orders that he passed, the most of any U.S. president in U.S. history. But I'm here to address only one, number 9066, because this particular executive order was life-shattering for me, my family, and for many others. That particular executive order, it was unjust, it was racial, and it was unconstitutional. My family lost everything. When I say we lost everything, only that which we could carry was all we could bring with us. We were given a family number. I'll never forget mine, 15066. I had that on my jacket, on my baggage, everything. 15066. We were evacuated into a former livestock yard. Yes, pig pens, chicken coops, horse stalls. That was our home. We lived there for 6 months, enduring the pungent odor of manure seeping through the wooden floors. We were stripped of our freedom. We were stripped of our human rights. We lost our hopes and we lost our dreams. In December of 1941, I woke up as an American citizen. A few weeks later, I went to bed as an enemy alien. A short time thereafter, we went to Minidoka in southern Idaho, a sagebrush camp. And as mentioned earlier, we were housed in tar paper barracks with no insulation. In school, I remember pledging allegiance to the American flag, freedom and justice for all, while looking out at barbed wires and guard towers. Our block 34, when we first arrived, had no water. Plumbing was not hooked up, against the Geneva Convention, if you will. And as a young boy, I had to bring two pails up to block 36, fill them with water, bring them back twice a day so our family would have something to drink and brush our teeth with. 120,000 of us placed in such 10 American concentration camps. We committed no crime. We had no trial. We had no due process. We were imprisoned for only one simple reason, for being who we are. That's the only reason. Executive Order 9066 caused the largest stripping of constitutional rights of any ethnic racial group since slavery. Back in 1967, President Gerald Ford rescinded Executive Order 9066. It made no difference. Whether he rescinded the order, revoked it, or abolished it, you cannot erase 4 years behind barbed wires. I remain a very proud American, a very proud Oregonian. But I can rest assure you that in this country, freedom is very, very fragile. And it's high time we do not become careless with our own Constitution. I'm very grateful to the state of Oregon. I'm very grateful to this legislature and to the House Rules Committee for fully understanding and acknowledging the injustices of Executive Order 9066. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Clem.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, State Representative from District 21, but more importantly, I'm Carol's husband. You can see why I asked her to marry me. I know you don't know why she said yes. Following these two is very difficult, but the one comment I do want to make comes from somebody who sits in the majority culture, sits in the majority party. You know, I don't typically ever have to worry about any of these things, I think. And I was sitting at home last night reading the news, and I told Carol that I'd read about this young lady who spoke at a press conference yesterday and then right afterwards got arrested and deported. And again, it's often a distance. She let her documentation status expire. So not something I would ever have to worry about. Well, that's probably what Carol's dad thought too. He was born in the United States. No reason to expect that Japan and the United States might go to war, and even if they did, why would he get sucked into it? He's an American who's never even been there. And so those of us who sit comfortably in a place of the majority and often think, well, this is somebody else's problem, well, it's not. It's certainly not, it's very hard for me to hear what my daughter said, but it's certainly not comfortable, even if it's not my family member, even if it's not my father-in-law, to know that people at one time didn't do much to stop it. And that's the part that's more important about remembering. It's not only to apologize and remember, it's that you don't let it happen again. And I think one of the most remarkable things that I've seen in my time here, and I don't mean to embarrass them, but I've mentioned it before, is about a year ago when a then presidential candidate proposed a religious test, your vice chair here publicly spoke out in what amounted to national press against it and said it is not our, I pulled it up to remind myself, this is not what our state or country are about. This is a member of his own party running for president, now the president. And not many people spoke out against FDR. He had packed the court with four appointees. They all voted with him and declared this constitutional. And so I'm particularly proud of Mike and his statements. And I do want to read from one of the dissenting opinions that was one of the only non-Roosevelt appointee on the court, so he felt free to say what he really felt. He said, "I dissent from this legalization of racism. Racial discrimination in any form and in any degree has no justifiable part whatever in our democratic way of life. It is unattractive in any setting, but it is utterly revolting among a free people who have embraced the principles set forth in the Constitution of the United States. All residents of this nation are kin in some way by blood or culture to a foreign land, yet they are primarily and necessarily a part of the new and distinct civilization of the United States. They must accordingly be treated at all times as the heirs of the American experiment, as entitled to all the rights and freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution." I just think we need to be very careful as we proceed forward for the next several years and several decades, that understanding what a U.S. citizenship means, understanding what holding a green card means, and not just carelessly throwing it all together just because somebody happens to be from one country or another. The Constitution entitles people to rights. The President of the United States sometimes makes horrible errors, and in this case it was ruled constitutional by a court and has never been overturned. It is still considered constitutional what happened. Wrong, but technically legal to have the commander-in-chief in times of war decide to do what they think they need to do. Doesn't mean they're right, and it means we have to say something when they're wrong. Thank you.
Sandy, June, and Barbara, do you want to come on up? And I'll just say for those waiting for 2702, we're going to have to roll that over. So,
am I the first?
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to present a statement to you. My name is June Arima Schumann. I live at 3025 Northeast 34th Avenue in Portland, Oregon. I am here as a founding director of the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center in Portland, and I have retired from that, but I continue involvement in that organization as a volunteer. For those of you who may not be familiar, Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center is a Japanese-American history museum in Old Town section of Portland that used to be Japantown until 1941. I continue as a volunteer docent giving tour guides to for school kids as well as adults. And one of the things that I try to do is to impress on people that what happened 75 years ago is not a remote, abstract event, but it happened to real people in real places in our own city. And one of the ways I do that is to point to the executive notices that were issued by the Army to inform Japanese and Japanese American residents in our communities to report to the Portland Assembly Center in April and May of 1942. And I'm bringing this poster to your attention because this poster is a campaign that we have instituted in our communities to inform people about the events of 1942, but reminder that this should never happen again. So the red stamp that says never again. But one of the things that always strikes me when I read this, most people don't read it because the fine print gets a little bit dull and dry, but I try to bring people's attention to that because it refers, these posters were posted all over Western Oregon, California, Washington's and parts of Arizona. And this particular one, we know it belongs to the local area because it's defined by streets bounded by 122nd Avenue, Multnomah County, Clackamas County line, and to the north, the Columbia River. And so I talk to the students, for example, and say, now, do you know where that is? And do you know people who live in that area? And that's where the exclusion order went and applied to. Then I go on to talk about the language used in describing who is subject to this order. And it says here, let me find it. Oh. That this order dated April 28, 1942 applies to all persons of Japanese ancestry, and here's the line that really gets me, both alien and non-alien. And I asked a question to the students, who are the non-aliens? We figure most people will understand alien means non-citizens. But who are the non-aliens? And some people get it right away. Others, it takes a little while. It's you and me, people who are citizens, but that they happen to be of Japanese ancestry. And that is the message that I like you to get as part of the legislature as you consider this resolution to commemorate 75th anniversary of 9066. Thank you for this opportunity to present to you.
Thank you. And I want to let you know we have about 8 minutes left, and we're going to lose some folks, and we want to move this today. We want to vote on this today. So, sorry, Sandy.
It's me. I'm going 8 minutes. Okay, I'll talk fast. So my name is Sandy Sumiyoshi, and I am a Sansei third generation American of Japanese ancestry. I'm the board of directors of PARO, the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, and I sincerely appreciate being able to present to you on behalf of myself and also for PARO. Oregon has been my home for 22 years, and with my PhD in clinical psychology, I've worked in University of Oregon, Oregon State, and the counseling centers, and also did war trauma work with PTSD veterans. But when Japan bombed Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941, my grandmother in Hawaii, Shizui Fukuyama, was supposed to take this boat to go to Honolulu to get treatment for her kidneys. But yet, because of the restrictions on Japanese and Japanese-American travel, she could not go. And so, unfortunately, It was really sad, but 16 months later, she died on April 28, 1943, at the age of 48. And my uncle, Kaoru Fukuyama, was the oldest son of her seven children. And his mother, you know, wasn't allowed by his country to go for medical treatment that could have saved her life or extended her life. But on October 23rd, 1943, 6 months after his mother died, Private Kaoru Fukuyama, age 24, Company D of the segregated Japanese-American unit, the 100th Battalion, was killed in action in Italy fighting for his country. And I think I didn't know until this past April when I was in Italy that actually in 2004, the town of San Angelo de Leith built a monument for the soldiers, 59 American soldiers, who actually for 5 days liberated their town. And my uncle's name was one of those red, because the 29 were from the 100th Battalion. And from that time on, they were called the Purple Heart Battalion because they received so many injuries. But I want to say that, you know, we would look at Executive Order 906 and President Roosevelt, but I don't know if you know this, that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt, before he was president in April 1925, he wrote in the Georgia newspaper, and this is what he said about American-Japanese relations. Let us first examine the nightmare to many Americans, the growing populations of Japanese on the Pacific slope. Anyone who has traveled in the Far East knows that the mingling of Asiatic blood with European or American blood produces, in 9 cases out of 10, the most unfortunate results. In this question, that of Japanese exclusion from the United States, it is necessary only to advance the true reason, of exclusion, the undesirability of mixing the blood of two peoples. Exclusion has been urged for many other reasons: their ability to work for and live much smaller wages than Americans, their willingness to work for longer hours, driving out native, the Americans, from certain fruit growing or agricultural areas. Now, you might think that was, well, it was, you know, for him it was necessity. But further, in November 1941, he was given a report that he requested by Munson, who went to Hawaii and to California to find out, to determine, was there a threat? And in fact, he gave the president the report that there was no threat for the Japanese Americans. And yet, President Roosevelt continued. And so another part of it we must look at, the Tolan hearings that were held in Portland. Okay, at that time, they looked at Executive Order 9066. And what were the reactions to it? The sad thing is there was a lack of white Euro-American public outcry and the silence of white Euro-American advocates for the constitutional rights of Japanese Americans. In addition, 70-plus years ago, let us be reminded that the then governor, Oregon Governor Walter M. Pierce, was a progressive proponent of democracy. However, he was for the rights of women and workers. However, this was for white European Americans only. In Oregon, anti-Asian and racially exclusive beliefs and actions were evident before, during, and after the incarceration of Japanese Americans. Okay. Got to look up some more. Anyway, you can read most of this in my statement, but
Sandy's testimony is in the record in its entirety.
Yes, sorry. So I'll just try and punch it. Anyway, I mean, I think the other thing, and I'll move on, and if I have time, I'll stick something else in. But I am the, you know, as a board member of APANO, and I'm particularly concerned about the Asian and Pacific Islanders in Oregon, especially because we have one of the highest numbers of refugees and immigrants. Since the recent, you know, presidential elections and the ideology and rhetoric espoused, it perpetuates the belief that America is not for people of color and belongs only to people of white or European ancestry. So again, you know, the xenophobia is rise about anything that's foreign or strange. And the sad thing that I looked at is last week, if you heard about, for Asian Pacific Islanders, last week in Kansas, there was a terrorist activity, and two Indian nationals were shot by Puritan, a Euro-American male, who confronted them with ethnic slurs, asking about their visa and if they're staying here illegally. Puritan with a shotgun blasted and killed Kuchibrota and injured Marasani and Grillo, a European-American male, who had intervened to help. Puritan yelled at the pair, "Get out of my country." And he fled the bar and he went somewhere else and told some people that he had killed Middle Easterners. So maybe it's a dream of mine and a fantasy, but I hold it. For me, I could just stop with this order and say thank you so much. But I hope that you will use your consciousness to, not on party lines, to vote with humanness and kindness and justice on future bills that come before you. That instead of a failure of leadership, that you will assume that leadership in your using your critical time, energies, and all to do intervention and prevention work. Intervention would be that you look at the kinds of issues now that APANO brought forth too about housing and, you know, and health and everything and do things on that. But also in when I talk about prevention, we have one about ethnic studies that I hope that you will look at that. How do we change our cities to be different? And when I talk about that, you also need to, what everybody needs to look is, where are your privileges? And where do you have dominance? Because as a clinical psychologist, I know if you don't look at that, you may act in ways that will be like President Roosevelt. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara.
Are there others waiting to testify?
No.
Okay.
Oh.
If there is anyone else in the Japanese American community, I would yield.
No, we've got one more person.
Okay. I have made my remarks for the Senate, and so those, they are in the record. So I will just briefly summarize. I understand that we're.
I just want to make sure we can vote on this today so we can get it to the floor and vote on it. So I want to make sure before we have our hard stop that we can actually vote on it.
I'm honored to add my voice to those who are survivors and to the families of Japanese Americans. I come as a person who has had the gift of 30 years of connection with the Yasui family.
Identify yourself for the record.
I'm sorry. My name is Barbara Bellis, Chair Williamson and members of the committee. My name is Barbara Bellis, and I speak today in support of this resolution. And I thank you for this opportunity to share. I first met Min Yasui in the summer of 1986 in Hood River. I was new to my parish, and I met him at a family funeral. I want to share with you a few things that he said to me. I know that you're aware that last year, Min Yasui Day on March 28th has been made a permanent feature in the state of Oregon. When I first met Min, he was standing by the grave where, unfortunately, in a few months, he was buried. And he said, "When my time comes, Pastor, I want to be buried here because you can see the mountain, and even when you cannot see it, you know that it is there." And when I heard his story, I came to understand the kind of confidence that he had in that arc of justice, curving toward justice throughout history. No one wants this story to be known and learned more than Minoru Yasui. He is a person coming out of our state, the only Oregonian to ever receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom, who throughout his life, he died 30 years ago. He was 70 years old. I didn't realize at that time how young that is. And so the centennial of his birth, which we have observed now in October, and I know many of you have been a part of that observation, and now as we move forward in remembering things that happened 75 years ago, I just wanted to share that bit about the confidence, the spirit, the indomitable gambatte, continue, persevere, which he brought. And I hope that when the film is shown on March 28th, which will be the exact 75th anniversary of the night that Min was arrested, that he walked up and down Burnside from 8 until 11:30 trying to get arrested, finally had to go to the police station to get himself arrested. In the course of our conversations and him sharing with me his amazing story, the last thing he said to me is what I'd like to leave you with today. He told me all about his case, what he did when he was a 25-year-old man and where he was now. I didn't know how ill he was and how close to death he was, but he said, "Pastor, I will not believe that justice will not be done." So I really celebrate this proclamation, this honoring, and saying, we will not believe that justice will not be done. And in order to remember what happened, that helps us to move forward. Because the Constitution will not protect itself. It's up to us to be vigilant. Thanks for the time today.
Thank you. Can I come on up? Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chair Williamson and the committee. My name is Lisa Johnson Ponder of Eugene. I'm one of the team of people who created the Japanese American Memorial in Eugene. I'm a legal historian, member of the bar, inactive at the moment, not practicing. But as a legal historian, I combine that with art skills to help create that memorial. I'm currently involved in a project gathering the stories related to what we've preserved there at that memorial. And in that capacity, I'm speaking to you. Some of the things I've learned, and I understand the time is short. I will be summarizing it. I've learned firsthand from many people at Tule Lake pilgrimages and by personal conversation. The things that people experienced from the executive order 75 years ago parallel what domestic violence survivors experience in terms of the loss of privacy, the emotional coercion, the devastation psychologically and on family. People had to, for example, destroy all their family photos, their family heirlooms, their family legacy items. They don't have the furniture that grandma gave them, the photograph of mother in her wedding dress. Those things were dangerous to have at their home in terms of the FBI and the internment camps. The devastation psychologically has continued. And I wanted to mention, most importantly, some of the 80-year-olds that I'm talking to now. A woman in her 80s who was telling me that in a retreat she was doodling and she was told to understand her doodles. She looked at her doodles and it has a little line like this, a little X, a little line, a little X, little line, little X. She says, ah, doodle, nothing. And then it came to her. She was a 2-year-old in Tule Lake concentration camp, and that was the barbed wire. And there she was 70 years later, still wrestling with that in her subconscious. Another woman was part, a Japanese American who was part of the settlers and homesteaders in Alaska, got caught up in EO 9066, and her family was sent back to Japan to her family's hometown of Hiroshima. She left through the bomb. She now lives in Eugene. And her story is incredible. Another man is a Caucasian Army veteran who was part of the occupation troops. He's begging me to help find his Japanese-American Army buddy and what happened to his family through the camps. And this friend of mine turns 90 this month, and yet that's still weighing on his mind. What happened to my friend's family? And last, I'll mention, 2 days ago, I got an email from a 80-year-old, mid-80-year-old man friend who lived through the camps. His family got sent back to Japan. He didn't speak a word of Japanese. He was treated as the shit enemy because he was that American. And yet he was so loyal to America, the land of his birth, that he came back, has been a professor and good citizen with great life. And he wrote me 2 days ago because he's now having PTSD from the concentration camp so bad it's debilitating. He can't walk, he can't sleep. And the U.S. government is not paying for this care from the psychological devastation. In his name, I speak, and I hope you will vote yes. Thank you.
Thank you so much. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing on SCR 14 and open a work session on SCR 14.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 14 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Vice Chair McClain moves SCR 14 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Holvey.
Just real briefly, when I'm reading through I think it just needs to be said that we're recognizing all these injustices, but we're acknowledging the 75th anniversary of this executive order. And listening to everybody, I think we should be acknowledging the injustice, pain, and the suffering that was inflicted on the Japanese American community by this executive order. I just wanted that on the record that's what I feel the intent of this is.
Thank you. Right. Is there any objection? Not. Motion passes. Carrier would be Representative Clem. All right. Thank you all for being here. With that, we're adjourned. That we're adjourned. For being here with